This hour of the Jason Rant Show is brought to you by PRMI, Primary Residential Mortgage. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
A group of very wise philosophers once said, you know it's hard out here for a pimp when he trying to get his money for the rent. The truth is they should have just come to the city of Seattle. It's not that hard out here for a pimp. At least if you're an ex-pimp, because you'll end up landing a contract worth $150,000. The city of Seattle gave a $150,000 contract to ex-pimp, formerly known as Gorgeous Dre, Andre Taylor. Why'd they do it? So he could offer his expertise on de-escalation and alternatives to policing. Taylor has no formal training or expertise on de-escalation. Nevertheless, he's been named the Street Czar, which is a completely made-up title. Doesn't actually mean anything. And by the way, he's held this position since July. I fail to see any public victories. Homicides in Seattle are up. Arsons in Seattle are up. Stabbings in Seattle are up. Just in the last week, there have been 3 stabbings, 2 of them fatal. Now, this contract comes to light at the same time that the Seattle City Council has decided to move forward to defund the police. So we're going to fire 100 police officers, but we gave a 6-figure contract to a former pimp who did over a year in prison, tied, by the way, to an underage prostitute. Now, normally, something like that in your background would mean you probably don't get a lucrative contract with the city. But then again, this is the city of Seattle that we're talking about here. And it kind of seems like Jenny Durkin owed him a favor. And this was her way of paying on that favor. You see, during the height of Chop/Chaz, Jenny Durkin was desperate for anyone from the activist community to give her just some semblance of legitimacy. Because she thought that if someone from the activist community stepped up and sided with her, maybe some of the activists who were responsible for her Chop/Chaz would step up and say, oh, you know, maybe she's not that crazy of a person to begin with. Look, so-and-so the activist likes her. Andre Taylor was that man. Except, people in the activist community, at least at Chop and Chaz, don't like Andre Taylor. Now, maybe part of the reason they don't like him is because he's tied to Jenny Durkin. And he made it very clear that he was tied to Jenny Durkin. Because he attempted to negotiate between Jenny Durkin and activists at Chaz, saying basically, hey, I can broker a deal. I can get you millions of dollars coming into community activists, community services coming into the black community, but you guys got to leave. Let me be that go-between. You break up, I'll get you a deal. It turns out that that negotiation, taken not seriously at all, was secretly recorded by the activists at Chop and Chaz, and they released it to make him look bad.
But not just me. Let me go for you to the mayor. Leave with resources and money for the community. Yeah. Let that be, then you win. Let me go and say, listen, I went down to talk. And what they are offering is saying they are so serious about this space, they're willing to die. But we have an out. I got to talk, you know. But we have an out.
Just real quick. If you're ever in the middle of some kind of negotiation, Producer Peyton, when the other side breaks into uncontrollable laughter, not a good sign.
No, it doesn't seem like that. Seems like something in like the movies.
Just generally put that in the list of knowledge that I have bestowed upon you. It's that really big book in the back. I mean, it's mostly empty, but you can put it finally on the front page. If they laugh at you uncontrollably, they're not taking you seriously. And by the way, the hint ends up also becoming the fact that we have this audio because it was secretly recorded. Oh, they're still going.
We have an out. They're more concerned about being able to be able to have some money for communities that are devastated right now. And if we can move that, they'll be with us in that space. So don't just leave. Leave with something. And I can make that happen.
He can make that. I mean, he didn't make it happen, but he could. In another lifetime, he could make it happen, but right now, no.
I can bring that back to you. I don't know. We'll ask for $2 million.
And she...
They might give us one, but this ask for it.
Yeah, they didn't get any $1 million. Now, as I looked at the contract that they had signed with him, my brain started to do what it does, which is find reasons why they might have, in this case, he might have wanted this deal to go through, not so he can go to the mayor and say, see, look what I can do. But it kind of makes me feel like he thought he was going to get some of that money, because his current contract actually says he could disperse money to community groups, and I'm willing to bet he thought he would go back. Listen, Jenny, he calls her Jenny, which is weird because she calls him Gorgeous Stray. And he's all like, Jenny, give me the money and I will disperse it. I mean, I'll take a little bit of a paycheck too. I don't make that much money. Maybe I can get a little bit of it. We'll see. But I'll do it. That's what I think happened. Now, he failed here, and yet still he ends up getting rewarded. Because, again, we live in the city of Seattle. Now, last night, I discussed this on Tucker Carlson.
Well, Kentucky, demonstrations are continuing following the grand jury's verdict there today. We'll have an update from the ground coming up in just a minute. So the question is, when all the police are gone, and that is the goal, that's the stated goal of BLM, where will the rest of us be? And who will replace them exactly? Well, the city of Seattle has thought about this, maybe more than anyone else, and this week delivered an answer. We learned that Seattle began paying $12,500 a month to a pimp called Andre Taylor. Pimp Taylor boasts that he can communicate with, quote, gang members, pimps, and prostitutes who won't sit down with anyone else. Seattle Mayor Jenny Durkan, probably the worst mayor ever. I don't know. She and de Blasio in the running for it. She says she's proud of the deal. She says the pimp's lived experience is invaluable. You know, pimps. The ones who beat hookers with coat hangers. It's valuable. It's valuable experience. In 2016, for example, the pimp vowed to, quote, go to war with Seattle after police shot and killed his brother. So are pimps the solution the rest of us had been searching for but couldn't quite articulate until the geniuses in Seattle came up with it? It's possible. Jason Rantz hosts a radio show in Seattle, and he joins us tonight. Jason, thanks for coming on. So pimps are the answer to Seattle's future.
Well, clearly, that's not your go-to solution when dealing with civil unrest and crime. Oh, no, because you're not a crazy person. And yet in Seattle, we decide to give this kind of power to someone. And this is directly from the actual contract. He's supposed to offer expertise and support services in de-escalation and alternatives to policing. This is someone who at the time of CHOP was out there trying to communicate and come up with deals for people to give up on CHOP so they can get up to $1 or $2 million going into sort of nebulously defined community service groups that could help address some of the problems. He said he was going to be the go-between. That failed, but it sounds like he's actually been rewarded with this $150,000 contract. So where you screw up in Seattle, you get a little bit of a leg up. All these rap lyrics talk about how so hard it is to be a pimp. It turns out all you have to do is come to Seattle.
But I'm confused. I mean, pimping is human trafficking. That's what human trafficking is. When we say we're against human trafficking, we're saying we're against pimping. It's selling other people. So now the city of Seattle has endorsed human trafficking? I mean, this seems like a big change, or maybe not.
So it's not that big of a change. Now, he's an ex-pimp, so I guess you have to go to ex-pimps for this kind of issues, even though we have a prolific offender problem. But there was a controversy just a few months ago in which the SPD had come out and said, we're actually going to start making arrests of prostitutes and then their pimps. And the council went insane because you're not supposed to go after sex workers. It's like a protected class. So in Seattle, like so many other progressive cities, they take a very evolved look in their view at this trade. It is really, really bizarre.
We say we're for women, but we degrade motherhood. We elevate prostitution and pimping. We sanctify abortion. It doesn't sound like we're really for women, does it?
No, it's not for women at all. There's so many people who like to virtue signal. It's the appearance of being for women. It's the appearance of being for people of color. However, we just fired 100 police officers. We're getting ready to fire 100 police officers, and we're running other cops out of town. And yet again, we're now normalizing pimps.
Yeah, human trafficking in Seattle. Jason Ray, it's great to see you tonight. Thank you.
If you want to actually see the video, it's online right now. Twitter.com/JasonRants. We still got a lot to get to. We're going to jump into the latest news coming out of Wazoo. It has everything to do with Asian giant murder hornets. They're here. They're ready to decapitate you. And then I don't know what they do with the body at that point, if I'm being honest. But I'll take a look into this article.
They have to make use of it some way. That'd just be wasteful.
I know. I kind of agree with that. And, you know, maybe they lay eggs or do I don't these they lay eggs I don't know what they do. I mean, they're killer. I don't know the rules. We'll figure that out and then get back to you. The president is getting ready to speak in the battleground state of Florida. We will be monitoring to see if anything of news value happens, and then of course we'll be jumping into that live. Until then, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? The environment.
So researchers at Wazoo, they now predict that the Asian giant murder hornet will spread down much of the west coast of the United States unless we decapitate them first. Now, of course, they're called the giant murder hornet because they go after little bees and they cut their little heads off and then they eat the bodies. I don't know what they do with it, but it's bad because then it gets in the way of the food supply because then vegetable, blah, 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 whatever. Okay? We're supposed to get... I take a position of not really caring what happens to the bees, even though I know it's incredibly important for pollinization and all that nonsense. But I'm terrified of bees, and so I pretend that I am allergic so that when I run away like a little girl, I apologize if that offends you, I have a reason. I could say, oh, no, it's not that I have a horrible fear of these little tiny bees and their stingers. I'm allergic and could die.
Are you allergic to murder hornets? Have you found out about that yet?
Allergic? They're called murder hornets. They would kill me.
Yeah, but are you allergic to dying? You don't know. You haven't tried
okay,
it.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. You don't know until you try. Now, Sven Svr.
Good job.
The managing entomologist with the WSDA. He says they created a plan to find all the murder hornet nests if there are more than one. Because they just found a dead bee, but now they got to find a live one, and that's how they'll go ahead and track them all down.
So our response to this, of course, will be to attempt to locate the nest that this came out of. This will be accomplished by hanging a live version of our bottle traps, and that is simply a bottle trap that has wire mesh separating any specimens collected from the bait, which usually kills them. And once a live hornet is captured, we'll be affixing a radio tag and attempting to follow it back to its nest.
What do you affix the radio tag to? I have so many questions, and most of them inappropriate, but like, really? And does
it's a big bee.
But the murder hornet's not smart enough to be all like, hey, this is the popo. They're putting a tracker on me. I'm not going to lead them back to my queen murder hornet. She'd kill me if she found out. Because I assume that if a bee has been gone from its nest for too long, once it comes back, they pat that bee down, making sure it's not wearing a wire, or in this case, a radio identifier.
So they're like the third smartest specimens on the face of the earth, apparently.
They're smarter than dolphins.
Wow.
And dolphins, I'm told, are very smart. Don't know if that's true, but I seem to recall learning that at some point in my education.
I've seen enough videos. I think dolphins are pretty smart.
They were so smart. Why are they still stuck in the ocean? Think about that. So the researchers over at Wazoo, they published actually a story in my favorite periodical. It's called The Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. I get that and GQ and Men's Health, and I'm set for a weekend. Zhengbing Zhu, a postdoctoral scholar over at Wazoo's Department of Entomology, says, we examined 200 records from the hornet's native range in Japan, South Korea, and Taiwan. Specifically, the records of ecological models. They're looking at the temperatures. They're looking at the environments in which these killer hornets survive overseas. And so they looked at that, and then they looked at what would be similar here in the United States. And they predicted that if you do not contain these despicably ugly, scary-looking bees, they could spread into Washington, into Oregon, maybe down into California. We know already that they are sort of at the border. We don't know if it's necessarily in Blaine or Ferndale or in British Columbia. Not 100% sure, even though we believe it's sort of in that Blaine area. They can go all that way. And they say they could fly up to 68 miles per year, which actually is not that far. But the longer they're out there and thriving, the more time they have to spread. And so they say the worst case scenario in this hypothesis, they could see these scary looking bugs dispersed throughout the Western region within 20 years or less. So we need to kill them all.
It's going to take them 20 years to get up and down the West Coast?
They're very slow. They were taking the scenic route.
Okay, then I'm very disappointed if we can't contain them if they're moving this slow. These guys are basically banana slugs.
Well, it's not that they move that slow. It's not like they
colonize that slow.
No, hello. It's not 68 miles per hour, right? It's 68 miles per year. So over the course of a year, they are just migrating around 68 miles. It's not like they're flying for a year and they're only going six. They have to stop.
Yeah,
and so they chill out. They let's say they're going down and they're like, Centralia is an underappreciated city in what? I mean, it's not, but I mean, we'll pretend it is. But there's that really cheap. What's that barn store with the ugly dresses?
The barn store.
It's something barn with ugly dresses, and I always pass it, and I always look at it, and I judge it because it's just so ugly.
They have a Burgerville. Just say they have a Burgerville.
Okay, they stop at the Burgerville because they heard they like good. Good burgers there. They make good burgers there and they like them. So they just chill there for a bit. And then, you know, they're like, I'm over. I am so buzzed out on Centralia. So then they can.
So bad.
I know. Shut up. I don't have bee puns. It's not easy. You give me a bear pun, I'm all in. You talk about wolves, I got a whole bunch. Bees, I don't have any. So they just buzz off away from Centralia on their way to the next city they run into.
Okay, but what I'm saying is like...
It takes time.
Yeah, 68 miles in 1 year. Why can't we contain that 68 miles that they could spread? We can contain that whole 68 miles. We're humans. We can move faster than that. We can contain them. A 68-mile radius? Yeah, sure. No problem. Contain them all. Kill them all.
It's the dress barn, and it's closed. It closed down.
Probably because you just kept driving past it and not stopping in.
Well, it's a dress barn. What am I going to buy there?
If you're doing it, then everyone is just driving past it. Nobody's stopping there.
Well, I feel bad now.
Why? Because they're closed?
Yeah, I just made fun of them and people lost their livelihoods.
Well, maybe that's what you can talk about in the Big Local, because we are coming up on 4:30 and it is in Centralia.
That is true. Yeah, it's cool. Close.
Now, where are you supposed to go for dresses and farmware? I'm going to assume.
Well, they have a in that general area. I think it's just like a block away. They have an Under Armour
outlet store.
Yeah,
the Nike outlet's right there.
Okay?
Yeah, I go to that Nike outlet quite frequently.
I do. I've been to the outlet for the Under Armour, and then I realized I don't like Under Armour.
There's the worst part about that mall is there's two wings to it, and the highway separates them.
You have to get in the car to go to the other side.
Yeah, it's lame.
There you go. DXL Big and Tall, though, is still open if you guys are interested. You're listening to the Jason Rand Show. As that dude just said, Big Local coming up next.
Olympia, Sammamish, Lakewood, Bellevue.
This is the Big Local on the Jason Rand Show.
Bellingham, Kirkland, Z-Town.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at the time. 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. That means it's time for the Big Local. Here's how this works. The media here, hyper-focused on Seattle. So much so, they don't spend that much time talking about the communities you live in and care about most. So we ignore Seattle and we focus our attention on you. And I start in Snohomish County because... amidst the economic slowdown, the unemployment that is hitting this entire region, but Snohomish County's been hit especially hard, Snow Isle Libraries, they're now offering virtual training for people who are just trying to get back onto the job market. And this is the most amazing thing they've ever done.
Microsoft Office products, Microsoft Technology Associations, and even things like QuickBooks certifications. There's also the Adobe certifications as well that are requested on a variety of resumes.
Now, I assume there are some people, and I suppose it depends on what industry they work in. You hear something like that, you don't think it's that big of a deal. Oh, wow, you learned how to use Microsoft. There are people who don't know how to use Microsoft. And as a result of not knowing how to use such a simple program, a program they might not even have access to, they are at a disadvantage in trying to get a job. And so putting them in a seminar, in a job training session, to learn something like that, it makes it easier for someone to actually give them a job. We need more of these kinds of programs, and it has to happen all across the state. It has to happen all across the country. We need more of this for folks who are either very low income or even homeless, but going through some sort of program where we can help not just get people off the streets and into shelter, but into programs like this. People are so much better off when they're taught the skills they need to not just get a job, but keep a job. They are much better served, we are all better served, than simply giving someone a handout. It instills in you just having a job, having these responsibilities. It instills in you confidence and purpose and accomplishment. And I've spoken to people who have been homeless, and then they got off the streets, and then they ended up getting a job, the first job that they held in a very long time. The feeling when they got that first paycheck, how it kind of made them whole. It wasn't a lot of money in that first paycheck, but it was a lot more than they got when they were living out on the streets begging for money. And sometimes that one little thing can change someone's life, keep them on that path. That's amazing, but it's something I feel a lot of folks just won't admit. Because it might either sound heartless that you're saying you should teach people to fend for themselves rather than give them a handout. It's not heartless. Or maybe they don't want to talk about it and acknowledge this because it conflicts with an ideology that frankly constantly promotes social programs, which have a role. But they can't be forever. And the sooner we can get someone off of those social programs, giving them the tools that they actually need, the better it is, not just for them, but obviously for all of us, because we don't want to have to pay for someone for the rest of their lives. So kudos to the Snow Isle Libraries for doing this. And I know a lot of others have been doing this around the state as well, but they just decided to restart these programs, and it's going to go a long way. Meanwhile, story comes out of Richland, Washington. We talked yesterday about the CDC has new guidelines for Halloween that essentially says you can't do anything fun. And so in Richland, they're continuing with their Halloween carnival, but they're making it so that it's not going to be fun. And so I suppose we're exactly in the same position we were in when we complained that CDC just canceled Halloween. Now, it's not going to be full of hay rides. That part's okay. And it's not going to have the corn mazes, which, you know, it's fun unless you get stuck in one for like 4.5 hours and then you're just wondering where your friends went and then you realize, I think they just left me here. I mean, left you there.
Sounds like it happened to you.
No, either,
like,
I was giving just quite a purely
a bit,
hypothetical.
Or it just
no,
scarred you.
You've
massively.
Never heard stories of going into the corn maze in Snohomish and near the pumpkin patch, and then just getting lost, and you're like, Matt, where did you go? And no response, and then you're all like, Dan, where are you with Matt? Where are you? And then you just, like, walk around aimlessly for 4 hours, and then you get out and you realize you got to call an Uber home. You've never heard of that completely random story before? I thought I saw that on Twitter the other day.
No, that sounds weirdly specific, so no, I haven't heard of that.
So no corn mazes, no hay rides, and the carnival will be mostly virtual. They've got virtual Halloween-themed events And that's all it says. So, can I just say that when you get the news that the CDC has essentially told you not to do any of the fun stuff for Halloween, don't come out and say you are still going to move forward with your annual Halloween carnival if you're not, in fact, going to continue with your annual Halloween carnival. Simply saying we're going to do it online, not a substitute. Kind of like when we were talking about the Puyallup Fair. No, not the Washington State Fair. I will not call it that. They say we're not going to do it, but you can come on over still and we'll sell you a scone in your car and you can eat that big hamburger, the earthquake burger, and get fat over there. Just stay in your car and even get fatter because you're not even burning the calories getting out of the car because you parked 14 blocks away because you're not paying for the parking across the street. Then you finally got in, you did a little bit of a lap because you couldn't find the earthquake burger place or the fried butter. Finally got there, you ate it, and you realize it's not that good. And then you walk the 16 blocks home. At least you burned some calories. Now, fatty McFatface is just driving up there and asking for the scone.
It's the best. I've been there twice. I've been there twice. It's so fun.
Fatty.
Yeah, it's great. They got good barbecue, and then I go and get my baker's dozen of scones, and then I got breakfast for about 2 days.
You get you ate it in the car on the ride home. Who are you kidding? Who are you kidding? You're ate it on the ride
you're
home.
You're not
don't
wrong,
pretend.
But there's 13
no,
of them.
I'm
I can't go
wrong.
Through 13 scones on
oh,
one
yes,
car ride.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can.
You believe in me. Thank you.
You're very welcome. I don't believe in many things, but your ability to stuff your face on a 45-minute ride home from Puyallup to Newcastle, although it's not that far.
Yeah, it's about 45.
Yeah, it's about 45 minutes. And then finally, Washington State University in the Tri-Cities, they're offering a community classroom series on a whole bunch of issues, including race and equity. Starts actually next week. And these are classes to teach students, essentially, to become activists. But not just like a general, here, if you're curious about a certain issue, you can become an activist. No, they're looking very specifically at promoting a social justice cause. They're not hiding their intent. Christine Cody is the coordinator over at Wazoo Tri-Cities. She says, we believe that together we can become a community that is more empowered to lead anti-racist efforts. Anti-racist efforts means not simply you're not going to be a racist. It is now you will be pushing for very specific policies, specific programs, legislation. There is a rallying cry right now coming from the left. And if you pay close attention, you'll pick up on it. Because now they're saying anti-racist. Have you realized that over the course of the last like year or so? They're saying you become anti-racist. You can't simply not be racist. Because being simply not racist is not active. It's kind of passive. They don't want you to be passive. They want you to be active. And to be active means you have to be anti-racist. What are you doing to take away the racism? How are you acting out in a way that is anti-racist? And so one of the classrooms is called Dismantling Racism, the Game of Change. It's weird because if Wazoo Tri-Cities has all the answers to dismantling racism, you would wonder, why are we still in this position in 2020 where you're constantly complaining about racism? So that event is positioned this way. The workshop and discussion will offer language and practices to shift viewpoints from a majority group's perspective to that of one that's marginalized. Discussions will be led by Thetibi Lewis, professor of English, and Dr. Marie Therard, director of neuroanesthesia. What is that? We don't know. What does it have to do with dismantling racism? Stop asking so many questions. It will include how to identify issues of bias and structural racism and ways to reduce the systemic impact. Now, that very goal suggests their bias. There are people who believe every single system that we have in place, every single system, was formed either via white supremacy or has some sort of racist intent. They take that position because these structures, these systems, these institutions were founded or developed by white people at a time where white people held a higher role than black people. Now, of course, that is a very simplistic way to talk about it, but that's how they view these things. And so literally every system that you have in place right now, they will claim, these activists, that there is racism involved and you need to break it down. And you're supposed to just assume that they're telling you the truth. Not that they have to make their case. And that's very clearly the issue here. They don't have to make their case. They are treating it as fact. And they are going to give you the tools. They're going to give you the advice that you need to follow in order to get to a place where you're dismantling the systems that they want you to dismantle. This is about turning people into anti-racist social justice activists. I can't wait to go, and I'm going to Zoom bomb them.
That would be fun. A Jason Rantz Zoom bomb? You could probably get that sponsored.
I am Zoom bombing the heck out of that one. Don't know what Zoom bombing is? Well, you must have missed my story about Snohomish County schools. Go to ktth.com and you can read my blog from just a few days ago. Don't read it with children present. You're listening to the Jason Rantz Show. When we come back, Louisville didn't react well to the Breonna Taylor announcement. Seattle, D.C., so many others didn't either. But if you watch the media coverage, it might all have been either peaceful or warranted. We're going to get into that. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. Last night, it was total lawlessness in parts of this country in major cities. Seattle, Portland, and of course, Louisville. There were a lot of people, activists in the community, who were upset that we didn't get any murder charges against the police involved in the killing of Breonna Taylor. She had become this rallying cry. Say her name. Activists and athletes and celebrities said over and over and over again, say her name. But a lot of what they said happened didn't actually happen. We were told that she died as a result of a no-knock warrant arrest, but as the Attorney General of Kentucky, Daniel Cameron, noted,
evidence shows that officers both knocked and announced their presence at the apartment. The officers' statements about their announcement are corroborated by an independent witness.
Her boyfriend, Kenneth Walker, he shot first. One of his bullets struck Sergeant Jonathan Mattingly.
Walker fired the shot that hit Sergeant Mattingly, and there is no evidence to support that Sergeant Mattingly was hit by friendly fire from other officers.
Walker admits this, that he shot first. Now, he says, I thought someone was breaking in and I was protecting myself. He did not hear, he says, the announcement that they were cops. Now, when the officers were shot at, they did what they're supposed to do, which is return fire. Now, one of the officers shot blindly. You're not supposed to do that. And that's why he's being charged. But not for murder. Now, should Breonna Taylor have died? No. Of course not. But that she did doesn't make this a murder. It makes it a tragedy. It makes it a mistake. But the way this is being treated in the media and by activists, the way, frankly, at this point, any issue of a white officer interacting with a black suspect, armed or unarmed, the way this story is treated and they're all treated is almost designed to cause some kind of violent uproar. The Washington Post criticized Daniel Cameron for not doing a good enough job explaining, quote, why three white officers will face no criminal charges in the shooting death of an unarmed black woman who was in her apartment in the middle of the night when they gunned her down. They make it sound like she was targeted, specifically to be murdered, which of course she wasn't. But the media is going to continue to push these implications because some of them feel that fomenting this kind of anger is justified. Listen to MSNBC.
Your death is irrelevant to the law in the state of Kentucky. Your death doesn't matter. Your life doesn't matter. This was a Black Lives Don't Matter ruling.
Imagine hearing that as an African American. Imagine the fear and the anger that instills in you. Think about that.
If you're not safe in your house and you're not safe on the streets, WTF. I mean, where do we go
WTF.
From here?
Pepperball.
You're not safe anywhere because I can't go anywhere, Nicole. If I go jogging, I could end up like Ahmaud Arbery. You can't go anywhere if you're black.
You can't go anywhere if you're black except to the studio in which you get compensated for giving your opinion. What do you think happens when you hear that nonstop? You start to get angry. You start to get scared. You start to look at all cops exactly the same way. When a cop does something bad, it supposedly represents all cops everywhere. There is systemic racism in place. Here's the data. And then you go back and you look last year, for example, at the 10 deaths between an officer-involved shooting and someone who was unarmed who was black. Now, of course, in all of those cases, these weren't simply murders and executions. There's context. But even looking at that number, you say, okay, 10. 10 is too many. Okay. And as a result of that 10, they say, this is systemic racism. It's institutionalized. That's why it happens. And yet, when a teacher does something wrong, we don't call out the system and the institution as being beyond repair, right? We don't say all teachers are molesters. We don't say all teachers mistreat autistic students. We say that teacher did something bad. But all cops are bad. A-C-A-B. Different B word. When you tell people this over and over and over again, the next time they have any interaction with a cop, including simply being pulled over because you sped and you know you sped, and the cop comes to your window, all of a sudden, you're taking on much different energy. You're getting aggressive because you're scared, because you're told that this cop is there to kill you. And then you act out in a way that you wouldn't normally act out if people didn't get in your ear over and over and over again some more, telling you how evil these people are. What do you think happens at that point? You think the cop doesn't pick up on that energy shift? Do you think the cop doesn't start to look at you and like, what's going on with this guy? What's going on with this woman? Why are they acting this way? Then their inner red flag goes up. And it could end in a tragedy. By talking about all of this in a reasonable way, showing compassion for Breonna Taylor's family, showing compassion for officers who are put in positions that they don't really want to be in, to have to use force, might yield more calm and nuanced conversations, but maybe doesn't get a bunch of people on TV watching you angry enough. Maybe doesn't do enough for the rating. Keep that in mind as we continue these conversations about how the media in particular cover these events. You're listening to The Jason Rant Show.